So you were telling me that you have been going to Cuba since 1998, as an anthropologist. So talk a little bit about, what inspired you to do this work.
For a long time before that, long before I decided to become an anthropologist, I'd always been interested in cultural diversity, and I'd always come across, I don't know, just intriguing little bits and pieces of history and culture. I remember seeing some sort of a documentary, I don't even know where or how, on Santeria, which is one of Cuba's popular religions, and being really intrigued by the way in which the Catholic saints, which I was familiar with from my childhood in a Catholic family, the way that they had these additional meanings being identified with African deities. And somehow it was always just in the back of my head somewhere. It was kind of intriguing. And I was really interested in Latin America when I was an undergraduate. So even though I spent a lot of time studying a lot of other things, including my major in biology, it was always just in the mix as something I was interested in. And so when I decided I did want to be an anthropologist, somebody suggested Cuba to me as that being a really good moment at the end of the 90s when there was a moment of thawing of relations, somewhat like what we're seeing now again. And
In government, or can you be
in
more
government, yeah,
specific? Yeah.
so that the U.S. and Cuban governments were allowing cultural and educational exchanges to a much greater extent than they had in previous decades. This was before September 11th, so things narrowed back down again, and Cuba went on the list of states sponsoring terrorism, and things got a lot harder again for, travel and cultural exchange. But to some extent, the door had already been propped open, and I'm part of a wave of academics, North American academics, who started going to Cuba and built careers around doing research, historical or cultural research in Cuba.
Now, you were talking a little bit about Santeria, which now basically means saint worship, that word. I understand that. What you're talking about, this amalgamation of Catholic saints with these sort of old African religious traditions is kind of what that's become. Explain a little bit about
Yeah,
what it is.
I think in the Caribbean in particular, if you think about the Caribbean as a historical crossroads and the enormous number of different societies that ended up contributing to Caribbean cultures over the time from European conquest, from Columbus meeting the indigenous inhabitants, right through to modern times. There's so many different cultural influences, and it varies from island to island as well. So the commonality, I think, between, say, Cuba and other places in the Caribbean would be that there is a very open-minded or additive approach to religious, I guess we could say religious practices. So instead of saying we here are this is our religion and it's exclusive and we choose this and not these other choices, instead, there was much more of an openness to what else is there and how could it be useful. So Catholicism was the religion of the conquerors, right? The conquistadores, everywhere the Spanish and Portuguese went. And yet the conquered peoples, both Native Americans, Native Caribbean, indigenous peoples, and Africans who mostly arrived enslaved, they didn't lose their own cultural, their own sort of what's important to them culturally.
They kept those traditions and maybe perhaps manipulated them in a way that was maybe seen as acceptable to the conquering force.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. But I think there's also, in the Caribbean, as in actually a lot of parts of the world, there's an openness to different religious influences. So, this idea that you can add on to what you're already doing as opposed to having to exclusively choose one track. So, Santeria is a good example of that because it certainly involves elements of Catholicism, especially, let's say, folk Catholicism, such as people's devotions to the saints, as opposed to going to church and sort of being part of an institution, but rather home practices, like being devoted to a saint, having an altar to a saint in one's home, putting offerings, talking and praying to that saint, which would be very familiar parts of folk Catholicism in lots of the world where Catholicism is found. But then also layering on African and even indigenous Caribbean ideas about deities and spirits and the connection between spirits and healing, between maladies of the body and other kinds of maladies, and the idea that spiritual influences shape all of that. So I think that's part of why traditions like Santeria are so open-ended. And over the years, scholars both in Cuba and outside of Cuba have written about Santeria as involving a sort of disguise of African deities in the guise of Catholic saints, which would have been acceptable in a Spanish colonial society. And surely there's something to that. And in fact, Catholic co-fraternities by both enslaved and free people of color were sanctioned and supported by the church as sort of a proper kind of way for people to express their religiosity. And to some extent, yes, they did provide an opportunity for people to continue not just doing Catholicism, but anything else that was important. But I don't think that disguise explains all of it. I think it's this more general sort of openness to find whatever works and whoever you can appeal to spiritually. So Santeria is focused on a set of African deities, mostly from parts of West Africa, of the Yoruba, which is southwest Nigeria, Republic of Benin today. But there's this long tradition of finding correspondences with Catholic saints. So a particular Catholic martyr like Saint Barbara, apparently a young teenager when she was martyred by her father for her fervent Catholicism, became identified with, in some ways, what would seem to be her opposite, this virile male deity called Chango, who is the deity in Santeria of male sensuality and dancing and drumming and thunder. But somehow, some kind of a correspondence was made. So it's not always necessarily even logical, you know, at least from the outside, what you... It's not always clear why a certain correspondence was made. But then the deities and the saints are only part of it. Then there's also just spirits of ancestors, spirits of the dead more generally, either sort of as a mass or as individual spirits that are important to people.
Now, one big part of the Renee Stout exhibit, which is kind of why we're talking about this, is the kind of herbalist and potion making and spell work that Stout seems to talk about in her art. You know, what is the significance of those things?
The idea within Santeria, and I think more widely in certainly Afro-Caribbean spirituality, and I think this is true of the American South, the Gulf Coast as well, is this idea that if you're looking at herbal healing, at green medicine, as they call it in Cuba, that everything has a spiritual element to it. And that means that even plants or herbs are associated with a spirit. So, for example, people who specialize in collecting herbs, which are central to use to any kind of ritual or ceremony in Santeria, you have to have the proper herbs. People who specialize in gathering those herbs have to leave an offering for the spirit of the plant that they're taking. Otherwise, you may be canceling out the positive, you know, the benefits of those plants by angering spirits, which are then just going to be unhappy, and that is seen as a cause of people's problems. So there's a very spiritual side to this as well. Different herbs, roots, and other natural things, not just plants, but types of animals, rocks, really anything of the natural world, sticks, bones, all of these things are seen as being saturated by spiritual energies, and therefore being useful for channeling spiritual energies, for offering to spirits, for mobilizing spirits to do the healing work that people need done. And when we talk about healing within sort of a more familiar framework, cultural framework for us, we would talk about, well, we're talking about maladies of the body. But the kind of folk healing that Renee Stout's work is drawing upon and commenting on and showing us a window into is much broader in this idea that any kind of problem is really within the same realm where it has to do with balancing spiritual energies, with making spirits work for a person and not against a person, with channeling which are the spirits and deities, the powers as they might be called, that can benefit the person or that need attention in order to allow that person to be healed. And so the healing could be personal problems, financial problems, trouble with employment, in the same mix with stomach problems or something awful like cancer. It doesn't matter. It's all part of the same system in which the ills of the body and the ills of the person, romantic troubles, whatever it might be, require spiritual intervention.
Santeria is very much present, but it's really not talked about as much.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly it may be more in Cuba, perhaps. But what about in the United States? You know, are there practicing santeros?
Yes. Santeria is robustly practiced in the United States. Certainly any major city you go to, Chicago, Detroit, being the closest to major cities around us, certainly both have active communities of Santeria practitioners. And it's not just Santeria. Anywhere that there's a substantial Haitian population, one of the traditions very closely related to Santeria is Haitian Vodou. Most people know it by the word voodoo, which has all sorts of connotations that Hollywood has given us that we have to kind of move beyond to really get at the religion itself. And that's not to say all Haitians practice voodoo. Certainly many Haitians practice other religions as well, but voodoo is very much alive and present in Haiti. In the United States, I think it's different than being someplace like Cuba or Haiti. One of the surprises I had the first time I went to Cuba was how open and apparent Santeria was, in a way that my limited exposure in the United States was that people tend to be kind of quiet if they are practitioners because there's a lot of stigma attached to something that I think very easily non-practitioners can see as being superstitious or worse, diabolical, especially from the point of view of Christianity. And there's some of that in Renee Stout's exhibit as well. She has some pieces that are sort of these very interesting, the Protestant church commenting on these folk practices as not being okay. And I think that is very widely true in the United States, even in the American South, in places where what in New Orleans gets called hoodoo is perhaps more apparent than it would be, say, here in Michigan. I think, too, one of the things that has happened is that over the centuries, practitioners, adherents, devotees have learned to talk about what they're doing as folk medicine or folk healing and not as religion, because the name of the game for religion is Christianity, and there isn't a lot of elbow room for these other sorts of traditions, which do get seen as being on the fringes. So, Santeria is really vibrant in the United States. And any major city you go to, even without finding practitioners, you can find spiritual healing stores. They're called botanicas, which is a word from Spanish. Botanica, referring to the plant healing that we've been talking about. And they sell a lot more than just herbs, other kinds of spiritual supplies. And a lot of botanicas have branched out to also include a lot of New Age kinds of items that people might want for New Age spiritual practices as well. And of course, a lot of that has moved online over the last decade especially. But these practices are present, and in a lot of cases, people are layering them on. So without failing to be a good Christian, I can consult the traditional healer who knows something about roots and green medicine as well. And I think that's really widespread, not just in the U.S., but really throughout the Caribbean as well.
And you were talking a little bit about some of Renee Stout's pieces that she has that are these comments from the Christian community. And I remember one of the biggest ones is called, it's called a storefront church. It is a, you know, a pulpit of sorts. It's got a Bible and things like that. And there is a kind of almost neon sign in the background that says judgment. And that sign is hooked to a chain that comes down to a bucket of cotton. And there is a picture of slave workers in the front. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, talk about kind of the racial aspect of this. You know, is it?
Certainly the power dynamics of these colonial societies, you know, British colonialism in the United States, what became the United States, and Spanish colonialism and Cuba, for example. And religion is a source of power. It can even very directly be tied to political power. And probably the most famous example of that is the Haitian Revolution, which was the second great revolution in the Americas after the American Revolution. It started in 1791, continued for about a decade and a half, and it was inaugurated very famously in a place in what's now Haiti called Wakaiman by what we would now call a vodou ceremony. It was a spiritual ceremony that involved invoking the African deities, which in Haitian vodou are called the Lwa, L-W-A, which very interestingly is a homonym with the word in French for law, loi, L-O-I, so the laws, let us say. In that ceremony and in other ceremonies, people were also passing around what we would think of as the most modern European Enlightenment motivations for their revolution, such as the great French revolutionary call for liberty, equality, fraternity. So it's very easy to see these practices as somehow being of the past and being somehow more backward. But they are quintessentially modern, and they were developing right alongside what we would think of as the key European Enlightenment values like liberty, equality, fraternity, the ideas of freedom. So the colonizers and colonial societies, the slave owners, were always very aware of anything that could be a source of power to the people who were oppressed and enslaved. And so I think that was a very powerful reason for oppressing, suppressing, trying to replace, eradicate these African practices. But people's deeply held beliefs and understandings of the world are very tenacious, and they find some kind of an expression. A lot of scholars have pointed out that Catholicism arguably gave more room for, I guess, what one could call the polytheistic beliefs of many African societies, and that it did allow, for example, in the worship of saints, for African deities, in a sense, to come along, be smuggled in, as we were talking about earlier. But even in Protestant strongholds, such as the British colonies, people found ways to maybe relabel what they were doing as not religion, but something else, folk belief. One of my famous examples, and it's a really nice juncture between Cuban Santeria, other traditions in the Caribbean and Brazil and in the southern United States, is this idea you may well have heard of the devil at the crossroads. There's all sorts of stories. One famous story trying to explain the genius of Robert Johnson, great blues musician, was that he made a deal with the devil at the crossroads. And that may be all we think of it, right? The devil at the crossroads. The crossroads is kind of a place of meetings and choices, and the idea of the devil bargaining with people, that's, I think, familiar within our mainstream cultural framework. But what the devil at the crossroads is also about is a widespread venerated deity throughout West Africa and throughout the African diaspora in these traditions, who goes by the name of Elegwa or Legba, depending on where you are. And Elegwa is the deity of the crossroads. He's the deity of doors, of openings and closings, of beginnings and endings. So of course he would be at the crossroads. And interestingly enough, in many places he did get put into the slot of devil by Catholicism or Protestant beliefs, because there isn't room for a being like Elegwa within Christianity, except as a devil or the devil. So here we have, in this story that I think many people might be familiar with about the devil of the crossroads, we have evidence of African spiritual traditions continuing, being reinvented and re-emplaced in American society.
You know, spiritual leaders of Santeria, like, no one can agree on what is correct.
I think another key characteristic of this, not just in Cuba, but all of these different folk traditions that we're talking about in the U.S. and in the Caribbean, is that they are not institutionalized religions. They are religions of the home, the community, the neighborhood, the village. And because they have been suppressed, because they've not been connected with political structures, because they are on the margins, on the outside, in the interstices, and often practiced secretly, there is no central authority to say, this is how it's done, everyone. Santeria actually is one of the more institutionalized of these different traditions, especially within Cuba. And it does have a pretty firm hierarchy of priests, people who undergo the very rigorous and increasingly expensive initiation to actually be priests or santeros within Santeria. But even there, for somebody to be initiated as a priest, they have to have somebody who is already a priest sponsor them as a godparent, a godfather, or a godmother. And so, in a sense, somebody's authority as a priest in Santeria is only as good as the chain of previous, you know, to godparent, to that person's godparent, back as far as the chain can be traced. And so one finds that there is a lot of controversy because there's no one dogma. There's no book that has it all and you can go to and say, well, this is the word. And, you know, we might disagree about what the word means, but we can all agree that this is the word. And in these other traditions, it's much harder to point to one set dogma and say, this is it. And it does make for a lot more room for people to look not just to tradition. I come from an authoritative line of priests from a well-respected house that traces back to one of the founders in this country of these religious practices. But it leaves a lot of room for people who are coming in more charismatically or more by inspiration or by being moved by spirits, as opposed to coming through an authoritative family that's already well-established and respected for its religious tradition. So I think that's part of the reason, yeah.
So when did you first see Renee Stout's work? Was it here at the KIA?
Yeah, when I received the invitation to give a talk about the broader religious context of her work, I arranged to be able to go down and actually see her work. I looked on the web a little bit, but there's nothing like seeing something in person, and the exhibit is amazing. it uses a really distinctive and vibrant aesthetic. I think it's a vocabulary you can sort of just experience it as it is. You don't need a whole lot of background to just appreciate what you're seeing and take it in. But I also feel like it's full of signs. And I'm not claiming to know what even some of them are, but certainly there are many that I recognize from my travels in the Caribbean, from my work and my research in Cuba, that do have all of these multiple resonances in these different traditions. And so that's why I'm really delighted to be asked to give the talk at the KIA and to tie it in with Renee Stout's exhibition, because I think it just enriches one's experience of the exhibit to start to recognize those signs and maybe even recognize other things that I won't talk about as signs and at least wonder, what do those signs mean and how is this all fitting together?
So signs like symbols or mm-hmm. or what other kinds
yeah.
of things?
Yeah. Well, everything from the use of bottles, herbs, jars full of things, to numbers that appear here and there, to chicken bones, the wishbones of chickens, to the cosmograms, which you'll see chalked or in sometimes even in the back of a painting or a photograph, you'll see what just looks like a pretty design in the background, or even the cross shape itself. And there's so many multiple meanings to those things, even the names. So the names such as Erzuli or Gede, which are both Haitian lois or deities within Haitian Vodou, and they recur, their colors recur. Other symbols that are associated with those deities recur.
Is there anything else that I've missed, anything that we haven't really talked about in relation to the exhibit?
When we were talking about the wonderful storefront church installation that's part of Renee Stout's exhibit, it certainly is an altar. And I think many of the installations and other pieces in Renee Stout's exhibit perhaps might best be viewed as altars. So there's one, the Root Workers Bench, to look for, one of many wonderful ones. And we can think of it as a workbench. And certainly with the chalked recipes for roots and which deities they're associated with and which numbers go with those roots and those deities and what treatments they can affect, what spiritual energies and powers they mobilize. We can think of it as a working bench, but it's also an altar. And maybe in some ways thinking of an altar within these traditions as a working bench, as a working space for mobilizing spiritual energies could be perhaps a fruitful way to look at many of the different installations. In the case of the storefront church, you were describing that judgment neon sign connecting down to that one jar of cotton with all of those resonances for America's history as a slave society. But even behind that, off the altar, if you will, not anywhere near the pulpit and the crucifix and the judgment and the Bible, there's actually another jar, almost hidden in the back, and it has roots in it. And in that sense, it resonates with the root worker and these spiritual traditions that you see in all these other installations as well. And I wonder if she isn't reminding us that even within Christianity, there has been room for people to engage in some of these other spiritual traditions as well.
You know, we did talk about how Santeria is so open to bringing in and adding on these different religions and religious practices. Do you think that at some point, you know, we forget the roots, not the literal roots, but the roots of some of the religious practices that we have in organized religion, like Christianity, like Judaism?
Certainly, yeah. And all of what we might think of as these world religions, are practiced very differently from location to location, which we can forget. And that's not to say that they're isolated from one another, because I think increasingly there are global circuits of Islam, global circuits of different sects of Christianity, of Catholicism. But there's also many local variations, ways in which even the world religion has been adapted to people's local circumstances and beliefs and traditions. And I think that's true anywhere you go. So Catholicism in Cuba, Catholicism in Mexico, Catholicism in Ireland, you can find these often in the corners, maybe not front and center, but these ways in which it has taken local forms. And I think that is true of Christianity in the United States as well, and certainly within these Southern Black traditions, that there are these commonalities, maybe not on the surface, but in deeper principles. One that has been written about a fair bit by scholars is this idea of these spiritual energies and the way in which traditions of the Black Protestant Church, the Baptist Church, the visitations by the Holy Spirit look very familiar to the kinds of spirit possessions that the people that I work with who are practitioners of Santeria are familiar with. I had a Cuban scholar here a couple years ago, we hosted at the university, who is herself an initiated Santera and also a researcher on Cuban folk religions. And her impression of going to Sunday Mass on the north side was that it looked very familiar, the energy of it, the idea of mobilizing the spirit looked very familiar to the tradition she was used to in Cuba.
And that's things like, you know, jumping up or you know, whatever, there are lots of physical just reactions, right?
Sure. And the idea that spirits infuse things, as we've talked about. They infuse plants. They infuse the natural world and natural materials, which become the stuff that you have to use to do the root work. But they infuse people as well. They're already infusing us in these ideas. And there are times where they seize us. They speak through us. They make us move. They change the inner state that we're feeling. They can even possess us. And those are certainly ideas that we find within Christianity. And it's an interesting point of convergence with these other traditions as well.
Christina Wirtz, thank you so much for talking with me.
Yeah, thanks very much.